Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIP podcast. This podcast is late. It has been a crazy conference season. Just got back from ASAP. You don't care. You just are thinking, where the hell have these podcasts been? And the answer is, I've been remiss. We're going to fix that. I'm putting out one today. I'm going to put out another one early next week, and then we will be back on schedule. So, at one of the recent conferences, Essentials of Emergency Medicine, which turned out to be friggin' amazing. Shout out to Paul Jeun and the Essentials crew. But at Essentials, I was given a nickname. I do not understand why I was given this nickname. And when I asked Rob Orman as to the reasons for it, he said, it makes no sense, and therefore, it's funny. If you want to see what that nickname is, then just go to the show notes for this episode, mcrit.org/159. But let's get to the topic of this episode. As longtime MCRITters know, my job is I work in an ED ICU. It's what I did at my previous hospital. It's what I'm doing at my hospital now at Stony Brook. Now, our ICU there is called the RAC, the Resuscitation and Acute Critical Care Unit. And because it has the words critical care unit in its title, we are contractually obligated to round. That is what you do in critical care. That is what you do in intensive care medicine, is you round on patients. Basically, if you're in a standard ICU, you come in the morning, you pre-round, and then you round, and then you post-round, and then you talk about what you're going to discuss on afternoon rounds, and then you repeat the cycle again and again until finally the day is over. But before you leave, you have to sign out, so you do sign-out rounds. Rounding is what we do in critical care. We need to round as well on critically ill patients in ED critical care units. Now, not every patient that comes into the RAC is actually critically ill. This may come as a shock to you, but there are patients that come to the ED who aren't all that sick, and some of those patients wind up in our unit for whatever reason. They had a story that was scary, even though they're not actually sick, or it was just they needed additional nursing attention, or they needed a one-to-one, and we happen to already have a one-to-one, so let's combine them. But for whatever reason, there are definitely patients that aren't particularly ill. And when we identify those patients, we do not do extensive rounding on them. We might do the standard ED sign out type of discussion when we come to this patient when we're walking around the unit. And our unit actually is a circle, and therefore we could do traditional rounding where we all gather together as a group. We bring a few of the computers on wheels with us, and we all come together and we look in at the patient. And if the patient's not that sick, we might just do a S-bar style discussion. I like S-bar. I don't know if that translates to the folks outside the United States, so I will define it. SBAR came from the U.S. military, and it's a way of rapidly turning over information or relaying information on a scenario to someone else. And basically, it's situation, background, assessment, response. And what that means is, in the context of a not-so-sick patient in the RAC, situation. We got a 40-year-old. He overdosed on 30 Motrin in a suicide attempt. Background. He's had two prior suicide attempts in the past. No other medical history. Assessment. I think if he stays here for 6 hours and nothing comes of it and all his labs come out negative, he can probably be sent over to psych. And responses. So what you need to do is check the labs, make sure nothing changes in 6 hours, call the poison center, just for reporting purposes, not because we need their advice. This is an easy patient, and then get him transferred to psych. And that's nice for a number of reasons. It's quick, it's concise, and since the S comes before B, it avoids the situation, which makes me cringe, which is where the person signing out will tell me 15 minutes worth of past medical history without telling me why the patient's actually there, and therefore I can't put into any context whatsoever all of the medical history. If you tell me, this guy has hypertension and cardiac disease and is on Coumadin for PE and, his ejection fraction's 40% and blah, 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 blah. And so he came here because he dropped a barbell on his right toe and we think it may be fractured. Well, you know, I needed to pay a lot more attention to all that medical history if this patient was here with crushing chest pain, and I'm only going to take a little bit of that medical history to heart with this as a orthopedic injury. Maybe knowing he's on Coumadin would be good, but I would have had my ears perked up for that fact if I knew he was here for a potential broken foot. I hope that makes sense. But what I want to talk about in this episode is actually the way we round on patients who actually are critically ill or who have the potential to be critically ill. And we actually formalized this. We made a critically ill patient rounding sheet for use in our unit, and that's what I'm going to discuss today. And obviously, if you go over to mcrit.org/159, you'll find a copy of that sheet, and you can print it out and take a look at it while you're listening to this episode, unless you're driving, in which case that wouldn't work out quite as well. So the first thing on the sheet is summarize why the patient is here in the unit and the story of what actually took place up until this moment. So, you know, sometimes you'll be taking these patients, they've been in the unit for 8 hours, I'd like to know what took place there. And you really have to get good at this as a resident or a fellow in terms of picking out the pertinent stuff so you're not going to miss anything important, but also not telling a 15-minute diatribe because then rounds will take forever. And you all, during your rotations in the ICU or your current practice in the ICU, know how painful rounds could be when they last 4 hours for the 12 patients in your ICU. We have 25 beds in my unit, and so that would just be the loss of the entirety of the day. And since we are a resuscitative unit, patients are coming in constantly during rounds. We don't have time for this. So you have to summarize why the patient is here and what you've done in a tight form. That's number one. Number two, discuss the pertinent, and I have pertinent underlined and in italics, just to make it abundantly clear, past medical history, past surgical history, and medications of the patient. Then three, we go by system. And this is where emergency medicine thinking diverges from critical care or intensive care thinking. In the ED, generally, we have either a problem-based approach or just a brain dump of everything going on with the patient in one stream of consciousness. And that works fine for most ED patients because usually they're a one or two problem type situation. It doesn't work so well on critically ill patients. They have multiple problems, some of them even iatrogenic, and it's really worth talking about them systematically. So when you are rotating the ICU, you know your attending got really irked when first you discuss neuro, and then you discuss endocrine, and then you bounce back to pulmonary, and you might have been shouted out depending on the kindness of your ICU attending. Well, we use the same kind of system-based approach on our critically ill patients in the RAC. And so there's multiple orders. Generally, they follow some anatomic pattern, but since there's a lot of overlap in where the organs lie, you might see variation on this list. But I think this is a pretty reasonable way of handling it, and by all means, you know, make it your own. So by system, the first system we talk about is neuro. And obviously, if the patient has any overt neurological issues, this is where we discuss what's going on with those issues. So if the patient's here for a hemorrhagic stroke, we're going to have a big discussion of neuro. But every patient, even if they have no neurological issues, gets a neuro discussion. In general, if the patients are intubated, you should discuss what their mental status is when they came in and what it is now. GCS is helpful in that discussion, as well as their level of responsiveness now and when they came in. During neuro, we also discuss their analgesia, sedation, and delirium situation and the medications they're receiving for those things if they're intubated or if they have a pain syndrome or something that's causing acute pain. So most of the time we'd be saying this patient has a RAS goal of -1. For that, they're receiving propofol. We also have a fentanyl drip going for the patient's analgesia. Last time we checked with the nurses using the CPOT score, the patient didn't seem to be having any pain, and we'd give the doses of those medications. We'd discuss any delirium issues the patient may be having. So that's neuro. Next up is cardiovascular. And under CV, we'll discuss the patient's cardiac function prior to everything happening, their cardiac function now, the results of any formal or bedside echoes, and then if the patient is on vasopressors, inotropes, or vasodilators, we discuss which ones and the doses thereof, as well as any additional cardiac monitoring situation we have, like if we have a patient on a cardiac output monitor, now is a good time to discuss those parameters and values. This is also the time we discuss lactate and SCVO2, because that also relates to cardiovascular function. and we discuss any abnormal cardiac enzymes at this point as well. Next up, pulmonary. Obviously, we discuss pulmonary issues the patient may be having. They're here with ARDS, they're here with pneumonia. If the patient's ventilated or on non-invasive, we talk about the settings. We talk about the patient's blood gases, and we talk about what we have done and what we will do for pulmonary toilet. And then, renal and electrolytes. We discuss the patient's chemistries and electrolyte status. We discuss their acid-base status. And this is a good time to discuss the acid-base portion of the ABG, while in general we will discuss the oxygenation and ventilation parameters of the ABG under pulmonary. We discuss urine output and I's and O's. And this is a good take-home. If you have a critically ill patient in the ED, you need to ask or order strict I's and O's. And that usually means Foley, though you absolutely can do it with the urometers of a collection bottle or bedpan collection. But a sick patient, especially intubated patients, in general, in the ED at least, will generally put in a Foley. And that could come out rapidly once they get to the ICU. But it's nice in those first few hours to have a strict monitoring of inputs and outputs, which means people should be taken care of all of the recording of all fluids that go into the patient and which ones they are, as well as the urinary output on an hourly basis. And then you could look at the two of those and figure out if you're putting in more than you're getting out or vice versa. So still under renal and electrolytes, we'll discuss any fluids that are administered or still ongoing. And then whether or not the patient should be considered for hemodialysis also goes on during this system. All right, next up is GI. We discuss any GI issues, this patient has a GI bleed, this patient has an ileus, etc., what the patient's NPO status is, and what's the status of their liver, both pre-existing as well as the measurements we may have obtained through laboratory values. Then, heme-onc. What's the patient's CBC doing? Are they bleeding? Are they anemic? If they have any oncologic issues, we talk about it here. Next up, infectious disease. We discuss whether we think the patient is infected, if so, what the suspected source is, what cultures have been sent, what antibiotics have been administered, and it's a really good idea at this stage of the game to ask yourself if those antibiotics have been written as a one-time dose or if they've been written properly, which is a continuous regimen for antibiotic administration, because a lot of these patients, at least in our unit, will be down here for 16, 18 hours, 24 hours, 2 days. And until we've turned them over to another team, they are ours for the orders, and they really need to get their antibiotics, you know, especially on these 6-hour or 8-hour meds. It's really poor form to get the right antibiotics in initially and then forget about the fact that you need to keep going. Next up is endocrine. Does the patient have any pre-existing or current endocrine conditions? What are the patient's sugars like? And we've been a lot less strict in the critical care world. It used to be we were keeping them 80 to 110, super tight regimen. Now, if I see something less than 180, I'm okay with that. Some people would say less than 140, I'm in the 140 to 180 range, I'm just fine with. We're actually finding now if the sugar is at the low end of normal and the patient has a brain injury, they might actually have hypoglycemia to the injured tissues in the brain. I am not tight anymore. But if they're at 260, 280 for a number of finger sticks, then you should consider maybe treating that. And in the critically ill patient, in general, that means an insulin drip titrated to the patient's glucose level because the sub-Q absorption maybe not as great. And you probably should put them on a regimen of regular finger sticks as well. We ask on every critically ill patient, do they need stress dose steroids? Whether because they had a pre-existing condition predisposing them to adrenal insufficiency, or they've been on steroids at any point in the past 3 months, or we have a patient on high doses or multiple vasopressors, and we should consider now applying that this patient may be relatively adrenally insufficient and benefit from steroid augmentation. So I have no problem in the early stages giving a patient 100 milligrams of hydrocortisone, and then the team upstairs could decide whether that's good to continue or not as the patient's situation evolves. And then I have the question here, can this be an endocrine issue, especially thyroid, especially in the older people? You know, they're hypotensive, their temperature's low, they haven't been to the doctor in 20 years. Are you missing a myxedema state, and would they benefit from testing or perhaps even empiric treatment of a potential hypothyroid state? And then last on the systems, trauma/orthopedics. If they are a trauma patient, what's their injury list? We go through each of the potential injuries. We ask ourselves, can we clear the patient's collar? And if we can't clear it, can we put on a more comfortable collar? And I realize now I've missed something, which is the radiology. So under neuro, we review the head CT. Under pulmonary, we review the chest x-ray. Under GI, we review any abdominal imaging, like a abdominal CT scan. And during trauma, we review all of the patient's imaging to make sure that there was no injuries that weren't known about that then have been added on, say, an attending read of the CT scans. So that's when this all happens. We review the relevant radiology during each system. Then the next step is the Fast Hugs in Bed Please acronym. And I think Fast Hugs was originally, I want to say Jean-Louis Vincent, but don't quote me on that. I'll put in the show notes where that's really from. And then my friend Chris Nixon added on, I believe, the In Bed Please, because that's just the way his mind works. So I'm going to go through each of these letters. And a lot of this we get covered in the system, but this forces us to make sure we've thought about it or discussed it. And it's, in some cases, it may be repetitive, but that's good in critical care. All right. So F is fluid therapy. What's the patient getting? Should they still keep getting it, or can we turn it off? A is analgesia. Is it adequate? S is sedation. Is that adequate? T is thrombophylaxis. Can we give this patient some subcutaneous heparin or enoxaparin, or should we hold off because they have other issues? Head up position if the patient's intubated. Ulcer prophylaxis, if that's a good idea, if we think the patient's going to be on prolonged mechanical ventilation. Glucose control, skin and eye care is the S. Indwelling catheters. This is where we say, okay, what lines did you place in this patient? That central line in the right IJ, when was that placed? Is it sterile or not? Where's the A line? Is that sterile or not? And we write that stuff down so that we know. And is nasogastric tube. Does the patient need one? Do they have it and don't need it? Do they not have it and do need it? B is bowel care. Not dealt with so much in the EDICU. We generally don't care about it that much. If the patient has continuous diarrhea, then we should start monitoring that as an out, and we discuss that at this point. E is environment. Is the patient at a good temperature? What is their temperature if we haven't discussed it yet? Is that adequate? Should we be putting on warming, cooling? If they're febrile, should we believe the heat trial or should we give something like acetaminophen? So that all goes there. And then this is more important in an ICU as opposed to an EDICU, but are the patient's surroundings benefiting the avoidance of a delirium state? Is the patient exposed to light during the day? Are they not exposed to light at night? Maybe they benefit from eye shields. Maybe they benefit from earplugs. Maybe they benefit from orientation therapy, where you're actually going to really reset their circadian clock to good sleep-wake cycles. So that all goes under that E. D is de-escalation. For the EDICU, we ask, what is the patient's code status, and should we be working to change that based on our clinical assessment? Has someone contacted the family? What is the status right now? What interventions are we going to do based on the team's assessment, the people outgoing who have already seen the patient? And then P, for please, psychological support for the patient, the family, and the staff. And this is always fantastic to consider. So that's run it by system, and then the Fast Hugs in Bed Please. The next thing we do is we make sure we go through the computer and we've seen all the labs and radiology, if it hasn't been already covered during the systems or the Fast Hugs in Bed Please. Next, we review the vital signs. We look up on the monitor what they're at now, and we see if we need to know any trending data as well. And then last but not least, the most important question always in emergency medicine, what is this patient's disposition? Are they listed now? Do we need to list them? At what point should we consider listing them? And then also during this disposition discussion, we talk about what, based on the outgoing team's impression, would be the conditions that would lead us to downgrade. So maybe this DKA patient is slated to go to an ICU bed now, but we know if we continue to work on them for a few hours, they'll be able to go to a floor, or maybe this patient could be extubated. And if they are extubated, then there would be no reason to put them on an ICU. So we discuss all those situations as well. So there you go. That's how we round in our unit. I'm super curious to hear the thoughts of both the ED intensivists out there, but just the regular ED residents, ICU residents, registrars, what have you, about stuff we've missed. stuff that you do in your unit that you think's particularly good. And any comments or questions you have, put them in the show notes at mcrit.org/159. This is Scott Weingart for the MCrit Podcast saying bye-bye.